You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Gray Malkin Lane's Patreon channel. I am in the middle of my Pride Month recordings for this show, and it has been a really wild ride. This week, we are here to talk about Cloud, one of the weirdest characters ever to happen at Marvel Comics, but in recent years, one of the most special characters to happen at Marvel Comics. I'm going to be joined by two very dear friends from online, one of them, Steve Duda, who I have spent a bajillion hours with at this point, as well as Steve's partner, Nathan, who you'll know as Dazzler AOA on Twitter. It's nice to officially like sit down and have a conversation with you, Nathan. We've
absolutely
been passing often. Welcome to Gray Malkin Lane. Let me have you both introduce yourselves. Let us know your name and pronouns. Tell us a little about yourself. And I would love to hear, what was your first exposure to the character Cloud?
I'm Nathan, he, him. Glad to be here. I have been a long time comics fan, into X-Men since I was like 12, which is forever ago. I think probably my first two issues of comics were like Uncanny X-Men 281 and Excalibur 42. So like, that's right when I was getting into the thick of it. So that was like Gold Team era. First exposure with Cloud would have to have been when I was getting to know more about the Beast, going back and catching issues of New Defenders every so often, because back then, obviously, we didn't have Marvel Unlimited. We just kind of had to dig through the quarter bins and hope that we found something cool and fun there. I remember being really fascinated by this character and seeing their relationship with Bobby Drake, especially, and go back and forth between genders. It was really exciting and really spoke to a lot of what I was feeling as a young LGBTQ youth. So it was really, really cool and exciting to do that as an adult when I finally got to read all of the New Defenders as a complete arc. I was in love with it for what it meant. And then going back even now to it through a lens of, had to have been at least 15 years since I originally read that. Seeing things that obviously I'm like, whoa, okay, cool. I don't remember it being that like that when I was a kid.
Over to Steve.
Yes, hello, it's me, Steve. First of all, my pronouns are they and them. The first time I ever encountered Cloud was probably Al Ewing and Javier Rodriguez's Defenders and Defenders Beyond saga. I may have known Cloud from listening to Tighten Up the Defense by that point, the podcast. I don't know, but I religiously listened to the podcast. That was all kind of like contemporaneous, was I was learning about that character around the time those comics were coming out, or maybe a little bit afterwards even. But I fell in love with the character through Al Ewing and Rodriguez's treatment. Just spoke to something so beautiful and powerful within me. It encapsulated so many of the things that I like about Ewing's writing in particular, and what I look for from characters expressing their feelings about gender or sexuality in comics. I would hope that we would see things a little bit more in line with this. It was a little bit of a jarring shock to go back and read the original stuff, but it's also, there's a lot to love there too.
Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I use he, him pronouns. So I'm working in a comic shop in the late 90s, mid to late 90s. I've shared this on my show before, but I was working there and my payment was an hourly rate in comic books. My first love was X-Men. My second love was Daredevil. My third love was the Defenders. So these 80s comics, even though I was reading them 15 years later, 12 years later, were really resonant to me. And I love an obscure villain. There's something about, you know, like Thunderbolts in the late 90s, there's something about that title that like made me want to go back and read the backstory of all of those characters, like in depth, in detail. I wanted to figure out where Beetle would have been and where Screaming Lady had come from. Always loved it, to the point where I became the handbook guy. I love an obscure character. I love writers that smart smartly use old continuity. So there's like a special place in my heart for certain characters in this like new Defenders run. I love Gargantua. I love Cloud and Herodin, like the mutant force dials, Slither and Peeper. But there's a bunch of them that I'm like, oof, like the Gamma Spores and Blowtorch Brand. Like there's a few I'm like, oh no, thank you. The Heartbreak Kid, I don't ever need to see again.
So, you don't love Hotspur?
Hotspur the demon. But there are some really cool mutant stories through this. There's also a tremendous amount of LGBTQ content related primarily to Moondragon and Iceman. I have not gotten to interview Peter Gillis, who wrote the latter part of this run and really took those storylines and made them shine. I have interviewed Jam DeMatteis a few times. Ooh. He created Cloud as just kind of another character to use. You know, hey, let's try this idea. I specifically challenged him, like, did you write the description as a blonde white American teenage girl wearing a Cloud bikini? And he goes, no, that's just the way the design came back. Herodin is like the Wicked Witch of the West, and Seraph is like the pink haired, pink dressed little like Russian agent. These are odd characters that get introduced initially in a long form storyline that DeMatteis was doing with the Secret Empire. And that's where these characters first get introduced. It's 1983, New Defenders 123 and 124. It's a Jam DeMatteis and Don Perlin collaboration. And when we first meet Cloud, here's how she's described. A solitary nimbus hanging against an otherwise cloudless sky suddenly come alive and move with sinuous grace in through an attic window, there to reform itself into a freckle-faced 17-year-old girl. And this is Cloud as a blonde in a Cloud bikini. That's kind of her whole introduction. She's working for the Secret Empire and like has to go fight the Defenders, and that's kind of her initial stick. We're using her because that's what she used back at the beginning. You know, she's 17. The Cloud bikini makes me uncomfortable, and most of the discomfort I have with this character after this relates to her being 17 or him being 17. We're not going to get into their crazy origins just yet.
I personally am a little tickled by the introduction of this trio of different misogynist stereotypes. Herodin is constantly described as a hag or a witch. Yeah. And it's just like, what if a woman was like old? Wouldn't that be really scary? And then Seraph is like this seductive, young but adult woman who can cause you to feel any kind of pleasure.
Like the maiden, the temptress, and the crone or whatever.
Yes, it's maiden, mother, and crone. But it's like, and then Cloud is just like, oh, look at this. You can ogle the 17-year-old in a speed Cloud because Kitty. And all three of these characters, except, well, Herodin, no, I'm sorry, would not have a very interesting character at all, but like her powers are very interesting, but all three of these characters are so very weird and good, way outside of their original remit.
If I ever get to write for Marvel, like more than just a few stories, I vow to bring Herodin back for a single appearance. I vow.
Oh, please.
She just gets forgotten by this narrative.
Every time I read it, I always forget that Cloud is 17 years old in the story, and I am like, oh no. I'm like, why are they naked all the time?
We have Jolt in the Thunderbolts, Kitty Pryde in the early X-Men, Jubilee in the 90s X-Men. This is the Jubilee character. This is the young girl who has this tortured past, but her whole thing is that she can change into a cloud, shoot you with lightning, or sometimes use her powers in really scary ways. Like she'll like move into your lungs to like choke you out. There's some crazy
or
shit.
Or to track you.
Yeah, or like to hide inside your body for a while.
Not to mention Cloud's telepathy that only comes up when, you know, the writer remembers.
And she turns back into a naked human girl whenever she's not a cloud. That's kind of her whole thing. She's back in Defenders 127, where the Secret Empire's chasing her with mandroids. And again, Jubilee, you know where you can stick your sensor bakes, you clanky pin-plated creep. She goes to the Defenders for panic. We're not going to talk about the Defenders roster, guys, but it's wild. I guess we can mention it's Angel and Iceman and Beast. Candy Southern's around a lot. Moondragon is there with Valkyrie. And it's important to note, Moondragon just got in trouble for a whole bunch of shit, so Odin put a headband on her to restrict her powers, and she's trying hard to fight against it. Her being on the Defenders is sort of like her probation, with like Valkyrie as her like lesbian mommy probation officer. We've also got Gargoyle, who is a old Christian man who's like 90 in the body.
His name is Christian, okay?
Yeah.
Isaac Christians. I don't love Gargoyle. I wish I did.
No, he kind of sucks.
He does.
Etrigan was way less cool, and I kind of love that about him.
I feel bad for Dolly throughout this whole run, because she's so like, oh my gosh, I love him so much. And he's like, in one issue, he's just like, yeah, I kissed Moondragon. She's like, what?
Oh, Dolly Donahue and Sassafras are there too.
But like, so sorry. I was gonna say, this team is so wild. Like, yeah. It's gotta be the queerest team unintentionally that I've read now from back at the time.
Yeah, they're always fantastic.
Beast and Iceman and Angel are always like dancing together and like hanging around with their shirts off and like hugging each other and
shit. Beast and Iceman literally only hang out in their underwear. Angel is almost always shirtless. Candy is often in a bikini. Moondragon always dresses like that. Valkyrie is Valkyrie and is more than three men can handle, according to Warren, and he's right. And then, you know, Cloud is Cloud.
Valkyrie has later come out, of course, as has Moondragon. Moondragon's doing this thing where she's making everybody desire her. There's these like running gags where they're all sitting around the table and like all three boys will be thinking like, I wonder what it's like to kiss a blonde chick all at the same time. And she's like inspiring their thoughts while wearing her like string bikini lingerie costume. I vow to do the trial of Moondragon on my show at some point, maybe soon, because I love her very much. So Cloud runs to the Defenders because she's escaped from the Secret Empire, but they hunt her down and capture her again. In 128, we see Professor Power as the leader. Go see my character episode with JM DeMatteis on Professor Power, where we talk about his whole shtick. And Cloud recounts her origins as she remembers them at the time. Quote, my life was so good before. Me and mom and dad lived alone, away from people, but we were happy. I never thought about my powers, and my folks never made a big deal out of them. Dad said he'd explain all about them when I was older, but he never got the chance, because one day, your rotten air cars came soaring down out of the sky, and my life was never the same again. I never saw mom and dad so scared. It was like they'd been expecting that attack all along. Dad tried to hold your crummy operatives off. I knew he didn't have a chance. So did he. Those animals tore him apart, and I saw it all. By the time Seraph dragged me away, kicking and screaming, our house was an inferno. I could hear mom screaming for help from inside. And then suddenly she starts realizing she's been brainwashed and has false memories. She escapes from the Secret Empire and like rejoins the Defenders. And that's kind of the whole thing.
With what her story really was, how much of this actually happened? I'm really wondering, because there's so many of the characters who are in the Secret Empire that you're like, oh, okay, cool. This actually probably could have happened. Like, and you're like,
who are these parents?
Who are these parents? Like, did the parents really exist? Did Cloud really get kidnapped from Carol's parents' house? Like, I'm so confused with the way this all is. Is it just all false memories? I'm very confused.
Nathan just said might actually be true in that we're going to learn Cloud's origins later. I'm going to save it for listeners who don't know it because it's wild. But remember this, because after Cloud became the teenager, maybe they went home to the teenager's house and that's when this took place.
That's what Nathan suggested. And I think that's a galaxy brain take, and also very frightening, because it's like if the parents were like, oh, we'll tell you when you're older about your crazy Cloud powers, that in light of what we'll learn later, that is so mind-boggling.
Yeah, at least some of it has to be memory implants, because we know brainwashing. So
at first Moondragon... it seems like she's a mutant, right? When you're reading the story, does it not feel like you're like, oh, Cloud must be a mutant? Nathan suggested that to me immediately when we were reading through it. Like,
the fact that they brought this character onto the Defenders is wild. It's a wild choice. It's a weird, I gotta go to like 1988 cartoons, like Saturday morning cartoon energy to make that work. She's the Cloud character floating around and you're just like, what the fuck is happening right now?
The fact that nobody's like, oh my God, are you a mutant, is very much reminds me of a series nobody's ever read, Spellbound by Wheezy, where the main character is a telekinetic and she's, and the characters are like, well, we know you're not a mutant, so, but we don't know what you are. And I'm like, how do you know she's not a mutant?
You two are clearly perfect together. These deep 80s comic nerd references. It's so great.
We do have very similar tastes.
So Moondragon likes to think she's a big deal. She likes to refer to herself as a goddess. She elevates herself to such a status. And she sees something great within Cloud. She forms this kind of psychic bond. So I mentioned Moondragon like making all of the men desire her. And somehow she starts doing this with Cloud, the teenage girl, as well. First problematic story. But there's a moment where she tells Cloud, I've seen into your mind. I've seen your gentleness, your compassion, and your infinite pain. You are not like so many others in this world. The heart of the primitive does not beat within your breast. Forget vengeance. It is a demon that will devour you. Look to the future. Look to hope. This message, because Cloud becomes like a transgender non-binary icon later on.
I absolutely prefiguring the later stuff that Ian Rodriguez would do. Like, it's very strong. It's very a powerful message there.
I always thought it was just Moondragon's latent, not really latent. Moondragon would have known she was LGBTQ. I thought she was just finding a kindred spirit with Cloud. But that's just a modern take on it.
So. Moondragon was a little girl whose parents were killed by aliens, and then she was raised space monks to be like the supreme telepath and like both, like she's got some issues. Again,
he does.
The Trial of Moondragon Mother.
Yeah.
Iceman and Cloud have some really interesting interactions. And again, I have not interviewed Gillis, but I have to presume he was writing queer storylines on purpose. It's very clear with Cloud,
it must be.
But it also seems very present with Bobby as well.
It does.
But J.M. DeMatteis did not intend to write Bobby as gay, which is the interesting thing. I don't know what Gillis was ending.
I don't know if I believe, I know you interviewed him. I don't know if I believe him. I have read that Iceman solo series and that is the gayest.
JM and I have become friends. I sent him some of the pages. Like, are you fucking kidding me that you didn't write this intentionally? And like, I truly didn't.
If you weren't writing this to be gay, JM, what's going on?
So in 132, the defenders are all hanging around the pool. Angel doesn't have his shirt on. He goes, now Cloud, remember, I warned you about too much sunbathing at this altitude. They're hanging out in like, is it Colorado or New Mexico right here? I think they're in New Mexico.
I want to say it's New Mexico, right?
Hanging out like in a rooftop pool at like Angel's fancy house.
Yeah.
Cloud says, but Warren, it didn't even seem warm the last few days. And then Iceman says,
elementary physics, Cloud. The air is much thinner up here, which lets more ultraviolet radiation get through, making sunburns like yours real easy to get. Besides, wearing your bikini too much drives the mountain goats crazy.
Come on, Bobby. No matter how hard I try, I can't find a position that's at all comfortable.
I wouldn't touch that line with a 10-foot pole, Cloud. It's too lazy a day for it. Instead, let's see what the Iceman can do for you.
And he like splats some snow on her back, which is his like way of flirting. I don't know. She goes, Bobby, that's cold.
Nothing but complaints, I tell you. I don't get no respect.
I'll show you what you're gonna get, Mr. Drake. A little touch of turnabout is fair play. And then she like zaps him with a little lightning blast. He changes into ice and says,
"Ouch! So you want to play, huh? A pity your vaunted lightning bolts are useless against my ice power, defender. For as we all know, ice is an insulator." And Bobby's really doing the Mr. Wizard flashbacks thing.
he's been reading Beast's like Word of the Day toilet paper.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like weird interchange between the two of these. It's very playful sometimes, but Bobby gets real problematic in a little while. But he seems to really openly be flirting with a teenage girl, right? Like it's giving some vibe.
Yeah. Why nobody came over and said, Bobby, come on. Like she's 17. Like, specifically seems to like zap him in the butt when he's sitting there. It's so weird, but I love it. It's weird, campy. I love it. But it's really inappropriate age-wise.
We're skipping over a little bit of stuff. We're not going to talk about every one of Cloud's adventures, but she's really integrated into the team. They're starting to use her powers in creative ways. And then, Steve, you want to tell us about Manslaughter, who is the gayest character in this whole run somehow?
Yeah, actually, I can describe him. I see him in my mind right now. He's wearing an all-purple outfit. He's got these light, like lighter purple or teal kind of like, it's a triangular face mask that's sort of like a Family Opera if it was a bandana. And it's got a hole cut out for the eye. It covers a half obscure part of his face. He's got a little rhombus cut out over his left nipple on which he is wearing a red pasty with a tassel that hangs down or a ragged cloth. He has several really long ribbons tied around his neck for the collar, around his waist, and around several other areas. It's a theme, the tassels and the ribbons. He also has red hair and a mustache and looks like an absolute pervert.
But it's also like he has like wrist cocked energy, like hand hip out, like hip cocked a little bit, like you know, there's
he's a really queer looking villain. I mean, I did mention the nipple tassel that he is a prominent part of his outfit for no reason.
I had to go on Twitter and X and tweet the middle of the gayest team I've ever seen. Then comes this guy.
It's like Arcade if Arcade were gayer.
Literally like that. Also, it's all right. So I hate to rip off. I'm not going to rip off Tighten Up the Defense, a great podcast that everybody should check out about the Defenders and the Teen Titans. They always called this guy Man's Laughter, and I've been unable to not read it that way. So whenever I read it, I'm still reading it as Man's Laughter, unfortunately.
That's fantastic.
And also, as they point out in that podcast, but I have to say it here, it is such a bad name for a hitman to be called, you know, the murder that is not malice aforethought.
So this is not a manslaughter episode, although he certainly could deserve one. But this guy is pretty savage with the team, and he tries to cut Cloud's throat at one point, but she like changes to Cloud form, so she's fine. He also comes back and joins the team before the end, along with Gay Daddy, like the eternal guy, the Interloper.
Interloper, yeah.
And like Butch Lesbian Caribbean, like Andromeda. Like they all come in the same time. We're not going to talk about any of them.
Just briefly, can somebody explain to me the interloper? Because I was like, who is this?
The interloper is just a big, hairy, one of the Eternals. He was used very briefly in Kieran Gillen's recent Eternals run, where they like tied everything on.
I forgot about that.
Oh. Just,
he's a big, hairy man in a fur coat. That's all you need.
All right. Just another queer character. A bear wandered in off camera.
Just one more. Okay. So in 134, there is one interchange between Cloud and Angel I'd like to read really fast. Nathan, if you'll read Angel. Listen, you guys, I'm sorry, but I've got... Okay. So Manslaughter's hunting them all down. It's like a 1980s slasher flick. And they're like, you shouldn't leave because he's going to kill everyone one at a time. So listen, you guys, I'm sorry, but I've got to use the little girl's room.
Cloud, it'd be better if we all stayed together.
If you think you're all going in there with me...
That's not it. Couldn't you just change into Cloud form or something?
That wouldn't change the needs of my human physiology, Angel Face. Valkyrie goes, shall I go in with you? And she goes, don't worry, you guys. Honestly, you'd think this was a mad slasher movie or something. So again, very Jubilee energy, but they're really concerned about going to the bathroom with her. So there's moments then where they're fighting, she's fighting Blowtorch Brand in issue 135. And there's a moment where Cloud gets like a big moment of like existential crisis. How can I pretend any longer? Okay, so we're reading this as a person who doesn't have all of her memories. But we're going to soon learn that she has a lot of distress about having romantic feelings for Moondragon. But you can also read this speech as if she's a trans person or a non-binary person trying to figure themselves out. So listen to how resonant this is. How can I pretend any longer? Pretend that I'm okay. I don't know who the heck I am. I know all my memories were just implanted. The defenders keep telling me I'm as normal as they are, that I'm just one of the guys. But how can I be normal when I keep having these feelings? They're so wrong, so unthinkable. How am I supposed to know what sort of sicko I really am? I can't stop feeling them. I can't. Somebody's got to help me. I'm going mad, but how can I tell anybody? How? Which is so sweet. And then she starts having dreams, like sex dreams about Moondragon right afterward. And like, it feels really uncomfortable with it. And in her dream, she is so distressed that when she wakes up, she has changed into a blonde boy body who now wears a Cloud bikini, but only on the bottom. Because the boys can have their nipples out and the girls cannot. The reason she did this, she says, is because she loves Moondragon so much, it's not natural to have feelings for her as a girl, so now she has changed to a boy. So reading that speech as a trans person or as a non-binary person, it adds a lot of resonance to what she's going through, he's going through, they are going through, they haven't figured their pronouns out yet.
Coming back at this now versus when I first initially read it, I can definitely see a lot more of the real specific trans metaphor here. At the time, I was just kind of wrapped up in my own little world and was like, oh my god, this is so weird. She didn't want to be gay, so she turned herself into a man. And I didn't see past that story plot point of it. I love that they are able to express the feelings they have, even though they don't know what they're going through, what it is. It's very real in that way. Like, I know sometimes we wish we could look at it and say, like, why did you go through that step? But it's a very real process that they are going through. When the first time I read it, I was very upset because I was like, why? This seems a little internalized homophobia, transphobia. But then I was like, wait, hold on. The characters have to be, it's a very real character thing that they would have these feelings when they're feeling these feelings that aren't normal.
Now, Cloud in this state, once they have made the transition from female to male, they go back and forth quite frequently. And they seem very comfortable using she and he during this era, just whichever identity they're in. The only thing that makes them uncomfortable is how other people are treating them with distress. Now, later, they is their preferred pronouns. And when we're talking about specific storylines, we'll use she or he to refer, but they is the pronoun of this character. It's canon. Thank you, Al Ewing, which is something we really needed. To illustrate an example of the team's distress, in 136, so the team does not handle it well. Beast goes, now let me get this straight, which is already hilarious. They're getting ready for a mission, and Iceman says,
how can you be so comfortable, Val, with him sitting next to you?
Please, Bobby, don't talk about me like I'm a monster. I'm still Cloud, still the person you knew.
Oh, sure. Just your regular average guy/girl.
Robert, you seem to forget the people who hunted you because as a mutant, you were not regular or average.
This is different, Val.
Bobby, I don't know what's happening any more than you do. Please, I think of you as a friend. I need you, especially now.
So am I supposed to kiss you or shake your hand?
He is 17.
Also, I got to interject here. When you want to help out a friend,
your
response is not to kiss them.
Yep.
Like, I'm sorry. That's so stupid, Bobby. You're such a fucking idiot.
Well, Bobby's attracted to the boy form, but wants to be attracted to the girl form. And it's distressing, but they're both teenagers. So back off. Valkyrie says,
Robert Drake, you are upset because you thought you could trust appearances, but your body once changed in a fearsome way. Even I once had a mortal woman partake of my nature. We are, all of us, often more than what we seem.
And by mortal woman take advantage of her nature, she means that she was living in like a mortal woman's form, but also she's mostly fucked girls.
Oh, yeah.
Means both.
Yeah. Valkyrie's also working through her own feelings about Moondragon and several other things in this series. So she's kind of trying to hype herself up for this. I have to say, Cloud in this period particularly like breaks my heart. It's really heartbreaking because Cloud is constantly changing form to accommodate the feelings of everybody else around, like Beast, Angel, Iceman especially, but anybody is like, if they're like, I'm really comfortable if you're in this form, Cloud will take that form, you know, and just like wants to accommodate everybody at the expense of like just being who they feel like they are or exploring themselves. It's just so painful to read for a great stretch of this.
Well, and as a queer person who did not like myself for my own gayness, you know, back then it was rough to be treated differently. It's 10 times rougher for people who are struggling with this on a more intimate level related to their gender and presentation. It's harder than sexuality, which is already plenty hard. They keep hitting her with it. There's a bunch of moments where this goes back and forth. There's a moment where Cloud in 137 says, my sex doesn't matter, Bobby. I'm still the same person I remember. There's a weird mystic guy named the Sheik Wazan, I think, who when he looks at Cloud says, I see a boy and a girl too, and yet one. Cloud keeps having feelings for Moondragon. There's a moment in 138 when Cloud changes back into girl form. Iceman hits on her, but when she changes back to boy form, he runs away. And he says, and I quote, and I feel like a hypocrite because of it. There's another moment where he says, come on, Cloud, can't decide what gender to wear? Hurry or we'll be late.
Shut up, Bobby.
Yeah. Things keep getting like intense for a little while, and it kind of pisses me off.
Beast gets his hits in. I don't know if you clocked that when Beast is like, oh yeah, don't worry, we're at a co-ed. The only kind of dorm that would take you, Cloud.
Yeah.
You didn't have to.
Yeah.
Drives me crazy.
Yeah, these are rough. It's rough, like little bullying. The Avengers do this all the time too. They're making fun of like Vision and Black Panther for like their stuff. It makes me crazy.
Yeah, same.
In 140, there's a lovely interchange between Cloud and Moondragon. Moondragon's in a new costume. She actually is like wearing more than lingerie now. So Cloud's in their boy form at this point, but they've just changed. Can we talk, Moondragon?
Of course we can, Cloud. Come in.
I just wanted to say that I knew you'd prove to everybody what I could always tell, that you were good and kind and beautiful.
Thank you, Cloud.
I also want to tell you that I really do love you. I want to be with you. I know I'm just a kid, both in my male and female form, but that doesn't make my feelings any weaker.
Cloud, you have to understand that I was manipulating all the defenders in my bid to get the headband removed. This affected you too, although I did not wish it. I was sending out subliminal sexual impulses in hope that someone, Angel or Iceman, say, would fall in love and so help to remove the ban. You got caught in that net. Please shake off your mad impulse as I have shaken off mine.
I have tried so many times to send off subliminal sexual impulses and it just never works. Cloud says, it's not a mad impulse, but all right, before I go, just tell me one thing. Does this mean you don't love me at all?
If you can tell me what love is, then I can answer you. Otherwise,
I want to know what love is. So just heartbreaking, right? And Moon
she wants her to show him.
Moondragon fucking with this like 17-year-old.
I know.
Frustrating.
It's so crazy that Moondragon uses this exact same line on Marlo Chandler so much later. Peter David, I'm watching you.
Oh, Moondragon. Okay. Dang it, I want to do the Trial of Moondragon. We got to wait like a year.
It would be really fun.
I love her so much. We're doing the Trial of Moonstone in a few months, if you haven't heard. And that's going to be fantastic.
Another of my favorite Stone Cold bitches.
Yeah. I really love her. I just wrote the trial notes yesterday and I'm delighted. But it's not till August. So everybody just, you know, stay tuned. There's a moment when Iceman is complaining about Cloud and, quote, her sex switching. I get so nervous when she's a boy. I mean, when he's it, they, oh, forget it. that it's too weird to deal with. There's another really intense issue of this run that involves Danny Shepard and the Heartbreak Kid, where it's kind of like a To Kill a Mockingbird story that's touching and complicated, and it has mutant stuff in it. But we probably won't talk a lot about it today. Do you guys have any quick thoughts on the Heartbreak Kid?
That issue is so crazy. I need to read it like three more times. I've known about the contents of it before from the aforementioned podcast listening. Reading it through was even crazier, but I was still trying to speed through to get to the cloud bits. So I'm going to have to take another pass at that Heartbreak Kid story because it seems really weird and crazy complicated.
It's heavy. It's very heavy.
Yeah. It seems like it should have been mentioned more often after this because, I mean, Robert Kelly, like, this is something that Robert Kelly can actually, like, talk about.
So there's another interchange between Cloud and Bobby in 141.
Cloud, let's talk. Talk.
I guess if we have to, it isn't easy, is it? You go first.
You should know that I like you a lot.
I like you too, Bobby. It's no crush, but I like you a lot.
But it's driving me crazy, Cloud. No way I can let myself fall hard for you when I know that somewhere inside you is a guy.
Bobby, first, I love Moondragon. It's why I turned into a guy in the first place, though she's tried to squelch the whole thing. No big surprise there. But I want us to be real close friends, Bobby. That's why I stay female when you're around, because I know you're uncomfortable the other way. But you got to understand, Bobby, it's not as though someone else is hiding in me. It is me. It's sort of like I'm wearing two different kinds of sunglasses, Bobby, but it's still me looking out of both of them.
And who are you, Cloud? Who are you? I want to say I have not forgotten about this line since reading it, because I think it's Peter V. Gillis hit on something so profound there with the idea that gender is just a lens that you can look out through, and you can look out through several, but the person looking out of them is still the fundamental same person. It really resonates, and it's so crazy how much that hit me like a truck when I was reading this terrible conversation where Bobby is just not listening.
If I ever get the chance to interview Peter Gillis, I promise to invite you. I've tried.
Oh, I would love to talk to Peter B. Gillis about anything. Like, writes a lot of really good stuff, but mostly music. Because of Peter B. Gillis, we know that Bobby likes to listen to Frippin' Eno and Cabaret Voltaire and loved the Bush Tetras, which is a really interesting wrinkle to Bobby's character, in my opinion.
We're going to jump to 143. Cloud is sad. Moondragon's watching this interchange astrally. And this is where Moondragon's slowly giving into like the demonic Shadow King-like character within her called the Dragon of the Moon. Or we don't need to go there today.
From Al Ewing's Guardians of the Galaxy run.
It's
fine. So
one more of those evil entities. It's fine. Iceman says,
is there anything I can do, Cloud?
Yes, you can get out of my life.
Hey, come on. You don't mean that.
Of course not. But I didn't mean to cripple Adrian Castorp. They did a thing with their powers that it messed up, and he's fine. Yeah. And I did anyway, and I didn't mean to screw up everybody's life by changing back and forth from a boy to a girl, but I did it anyway. I don't mean it. I just do it.
Hey, we all make mistakes, Cloud, and we've all got problems. That's what friends are for, to help you through them. And the defenders are your friends. I'm your friend.
How can you help?
I'm so mad at Bobby. I'm so mad at him.
How can you help what you caused? If Moondragon had never messed my mind up, I'd never have turned into what I am. Why couldn't she have let me be?
Cloud, I want to help. We want to help.
I don't want to be a defender anymore, Bobby. I don't want to be twisted and weird. I wish I'd never met you.
I know how that feels. We all feel that from time to time.
I think of what it would be if I'd never met Moondragon and how happy I'd feel. And I want that so badly.
Cloud, just try and forget Moondragon. All of it for a while.
I want to, Bobby. I really wish I could. And I remember having feelings like that so often when I was closeted. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't I have just been born straight? Why did this have to have happened?
It is messy, but it is so real, right? Like, who hasn't been like, God, if only I wasn't attracted to you. Like, when you're adolescent discovering yourself, only if I hadn't been attracted to you, you caused this. And it's nothing to do with that other person. Just working through all your messiness. And it's kind of refreshing to see it on the page, even though this isn't perfect. It's really refreshing to see somebody have to work through
it. I think Bobby is really sweet towards the end of it and like vulnerable, and is like, it really feels like he's opening up and saying like, hey, I'm going through something kind of similar myself. And I think that's really sweet. I get caught on the whole part where she's like, I screwed up everybody's life by changing back and forth for a boy to a girl. He follows that up with, hey, we all make mistakes. Yeah. I like to be credible and say, like, go fuck yourself, Robert.
Yeah.
I know he was probably talking about Adrian, but like, it doesn't read that way.
No, it reads like he's like, yeah, I know it's a mistake you turn into a boy. How dare
Yeah,
you?
he's like, would you stop? But seriously, I care about you, girl.
I mean, but also he's just repeating everything he's ever heard his father say.
Yeah, he really is.
Stay tuned for the trial of Iceman coming out right around this time when we're releasing the Cloud episode. So we'll have a lot of that there too.
It would be so wonderful if at any point Bobby ever expressed sympathy or comfort or kindness while Cloud was in the male form, but it never happens.
Yeah.
Like, spoilers for this, but he only offers sympathy or comfort whenever she's in this form, and it's because she stays in it to please him at this point.
God,
she doesn't want to set him off.
I love these comics. I'm gonna skip over a bunch of shit quick. Moondragon goes crazy like a couple times. There's a moment where Cloud gets wounded and a doctor does like a scan and realizes that their body is like put together wrong. Like your kidneys are disconnected and your teeth are made out of bone enamel and your liver is made out of like connective tissue. Like something's off. Cloud like is really interacting with the team and seems very comfortable with themselves for a period of time. They fight a bunch of bad guys, including Hotspur, who's gonna just got mentioned twice on my show and probably won't again for a while. And then we're gonna jump to 149-150. Seraph comes back and Seraph knows the truth of Cloud's origin. The first story here is called Lonely as a Cloud. 150 is called The Stars in Their Courses. And here's the big surprise. Cloud's powers start to go crazy, splitting them into separate male and female forms. But when they arrive in the hospital, they learn that there is a teenager named Carol Faber in a coma, and she looks just like Cloud's female form. No, take me away from here, Bobby. I can't go in. I can't. I'll stay a girl all the time if you want. Just take me away, please. Inside the room, they find two teenagers. There's Carol Faber and a boy named Danny Milligan, who looks just like Cloud's boy form. And they are in comas after being in a car accident. And Cloud suddenly remembers, oh, I'm really a cloud. I'm a sentient fucking cloud. And the cosmic cube, like, gave them existence and sentience, but it's a literal like star system who took on a cloud form on Earth.
Oh.
And when they arrived on Earth, saw these two teens in a car accident and like formed a psychic bond with them and then like took on their forms and like gave
and
themselves
gender.
Weird memories. And then the Secret There's Empire secret. Picked them up. That's the origin. There's okay. Nathan?
Yeah, that was nice and concise. I'm amazed you did. I just gave the origin in my car earlier and it took me about 5 minutes longer.
Wow. That was out of nowhere. Right? Like you read, I've always known the story, but every time I read it through, I'm like, what? That happened in like their last two appearances, like the like two issues. And you're like, hey, guess what with this? And then the next issue is taking care of all the stuff, the reason. But wow, right? Obviously this kid wasn't, I'm glad that you like were able to find out this wasn't the original plan, but obviously this wasn't the original plan for Cloud because it's so out there.
It's a really special story in that way, yeah. Though, and Al Ewing picks up on why this is special later. There's a lot of themes in the way Al writes Cloud that like I shouldn't exist, but I do. Mm-hmm. Life went crazy and things happen and here I am and I exist. And you know, again, commentary on queerness, which is its own beautiful thing as Cloud learns their true form. That's farther on. 150 yeah. is not my favorite comic book. I actually really dislike this issue, but it does open with a quote by Percy Bysshe Shelley, if I am saying that name right. Art thou pale for weariness of climbing heaven and gazing on the earth, wandering companionless among the stars that have a different birth and ever changing like a joyless eve that finds no object worth its constancy. This is Cloud's nebula phase. She's now like, or they are now like constellations in the sky. Steve, tell us about the star thief.
So I was talking to Nathan in the kitchen about this like right before we got on the call, and we both agreed, Nathan brought it up first, this whole issue could have been like a 4-issue miniseries.
Yes.
You know, like this really feels like it's like the Nightcrawler miniseries at the time. It's got this kind of like cosmic whimsy and insanity to it and disjointedness that feels like wholly unplanned, wacky. The Star Thief is a little girl, perhaps a mutant of her species, gifted with extraordinary power, in like a coma state, seems to have reached out and drained the cosmic cube of a lot of its energy, the cosmic cube from Earth that loves Captain America. And
this is the sentient one named Kobik.
Yeah. Yes, not the Shaper of Worlds and not the Aquarian, but Kobik.
But also not the little girl from the modern Secret Empire series, whose name is also Kobik.
Right. What is that, cubic or cobic?
Anyway.
So it's that cosmic cube, the nice one. She drained its powers with whatever psychic power she had had in the first place and used it to wish out the stars in the sky that were hurting her eyes because of a laser pointer got pointed at them, and is putting them in a pocket universe she keeps in a little bag. And as a result, large swaths of the universe are losing their light and stars. And to Cloud, this is like an encroaching mass murder of her people because she exists as a nebula and a pre-star. But the Star Thief does manifest primarily as a giant Betsy Braddock-esque mask in the night sky. Well, the vast void of space, I should say.
The design of the Star Thief's Betsy Braddock-esque mask is amazing. When I started reading the issue, I was like, oh my God, does this character appear some more? And Steve's like, no. I was like, I forgot how it ended because this issue is everything's packed into like this is a 12 issue miniseries packed into one issue.
Yeah,
But
Nate was really
also,
excited about the Star Thief and was like, are they coming back? And I'm like,
yeah.
never.
But also, it could be 4 pages.
Yeah, it could.
The Star Thief almost seems to be a commentary on like the innocence of a child unchecked. I don't really understand the read on this character, but it's a fun origin.
I will be very charitable. I don't want to like attack the story at all, but I will say it does feel a little bit like you're running late on a month's title. You need a story real quick, so you just whip one up. And it's unfortunate that that happened in issue 150 of
Yeah.
the Defenders. Maybe this was planned out, but it feels very off the cuff in a very interesting way.
I need to know, did they just say, hey, your title's going to end in like 3, 4 issues? You need to wrap everything up. And he was like, oh, okay, cool. Let me
I
put
mean, I
everything up.
imagine he had a little notice about when the title was going to end, but this is a running theme in comics where characters like the Infant Terrible or even Franklin Richards,
Good point.
if you don't measure their powers properly, then it's going to destroy all life. There's something like horror-esque about this. It's like when demons possess little kids, you know? There's an interesting, I don't know, I'll have to give that some more thought. I want to do a trial of Franklin Richards on my show one day, and that will probably be end up being the theme that we explore most, is the fear of the potential of our children.
Yeah, that's a really interesting read on that, actually. The fear of the potential of our children, and if they were not afraid of the dark, but instead afraid of the light, imagine.
Yeah, I really want to do that one too. I gotta do one at a time, everybody. Take your time. Yeah, take your time. So the Star Thief is concluded and Cloud is heading back into space. And Iceman says, that's it. You've done what you came to Earth to do, and it's over now. And Cloud says, I have to, Bobby. I have to become the star I was meant to be. But I know you cared for me, Bobby, and it hurt you, since because of what I thought I was, I couldn't care enough for you back. Now I know differently. You asked me once, Bobby, when I said that being male or female was like looking through different sunglasses, who was behind those glasses? Now I can tell you, it is someone who loves you best of all. I'll keep you in my heart, Bobby, and in a few million years, you'll shine through the heavens as I give back to the universe the light you've given me. And they got out just in time because then Moondragon goes crazy and kills everybody.
Yeah. Is it just me, or is this final monologue bullshit? I got to the end
Yeah.
of this and I was like, she's like, actually, I love you best of all, Bobby. I'm like, why? Why do you like that guy at all? Like, I get why I like Bobby Drake, but why do you, Cloud, like Bobby Drake? Like,
Exactly.
you don't have any reason to.
He's such an
Maybe they
asshole to her.
saw the pain within him. I love this idea of the queer person who's been bullied, like saying, I love me and I don't need to hear your apologies. I'm gonna go live my life now. I love you. Goodbye. Sorry I couldn't be what you needed. You know,
Yeah,
like there's
I'll
that.
make a constellation of you for a million years.
I love how Cloud falls in love with the two of the queerest members of the team nowadays. You know,
I
like
feel like Cloud
respect.
is being nice.
I think Cloud is asexual.
I really do too. I don't think she knows what love is in that romantic type of way. I think they're looking for the attachment, the person, like the personal connection, not the sexual connection.
Well, Cloud is all about love. I think Al Ewing very smartly picked up on that with the Lover's Tarot bit, extrapolating the idea of two teenagers in love who became Cloud, the lovers who became one. So I think that's really important. But love is not sex, obviously, as we know on this podcast.
Cloud is, I think, kind of technically transgender, but more than that. Cloud is also non-binary, but more than that. Cloud
By
is
gender.
bi-gendered. Cloud is
Gender fluid.
both mixed together. I brought up this song, The Origins of Love from Hedwig and the Angry Inch when I interviewed Al Ewing, which is the latter half, but I recorded it first. This idea of our male and female forms just being what it's always meant to be for this character. And this is Cloud's first, or actually second version of I am me exactly as I am, and I love myself. And this is interesting too, because a lot of trans trans people I know, for example, will initially come out as, like, say, lesbian, and then bisexual or vice versa. And then they'll say, actually, I'm trans or I'm non-binary. There's a journey. Cloud's got male and female forms, and then they are a nebula. And then later in the Al Ewing series, they become this archetype that defies gender.
Yeah.
Which is their final and kind of truest form. And I kind of hope to never see them in a comic book again, because I love that ending for them so much, you know?
So yeah, the thing I love about that ending is that Cloud literally says, like, you're on your own journey and I'm on mine, and mine needs to leave such a constricting place as the Marvel Universe, for example, in order to be able to tell that kind of nuanced, colorful story.
And I'm literally going to go back to a previous universe where your homophobia and transphobia doesn't fucking exist, you assholes.
Yeah, like, I'm piecing out of here. I hope somebody writes me in an indie comic someday. Public domain, take me out of here.
Cloud does come back a couple times. Solo Avengers, there's a story where Cloud teams up with Moondragon and Sundragon and Demeter. We're just not going to go there. But there is, you know, Cloud mentioning, like, I love being in space. I love creating stars, but I really miss all your drama, humans. Like, there's that kind of moment. And then Cloud shows up. Cloud shows up in Star Masters and again in Fear Itself, just in various battles. Yeah. But we're going to save the latter half of the conversation. But I'd love to hear from the two of you what Cloud's journey through the Defenders under Al Ewing has kind of meant. Having recently read this content, I realized how just wonderfully special it is.
Seeing Al Ewing bring the character back in a very specific way and use very modern language and terms and analytical skills that we've all learned since the mid-80s, it has been an amazing thing. It's great to see Cloud's gender journey take the form, a form that they are really happy with. And it's great to see them, a lot of their character was them bashing against the cages that they were in. And it's great to see them be able to exist in a place where they don't have those cages. And I hope at some point Al Ewing can touch on them again and show them in a even further along place in their journey. I think it'll take somebody of that caliber of writer to show the journey well. It's got to definitely be somebody in the LGBT.
Cloud's journey in Defenders is one of my favorite stories in comics. Like, not to undersell it, the Defenders Beyond by Al Ewing and Javier Rodriguez is literally one of my favorite comics I've ever read. And Cloud is a big part of that, along with, like, you know, Harpy and other characters. Cloud's journey in that.
Did you say Harpy?
Of course.
Oh, I love that you chose Harpy.
This is me. I love the Harpy. I'm a big fan of the Harpy. Harpy is the only person in Defenders and Defenders Beyond who looks at Cloud and says, hey, I'll remember your pronouns. Don't worry, I'll remember. I'll make sure Steven remembers. Cloud is just so beautiful to me because Cloud becomes the archetype of, like, freedom of choice, of agency, of freedom from confinement, of freedom of restrictions, of change and growth, but not illusory change or growth, real, you know, evolution towards something that you want. And it's because Cloud gets to choose their own path. And it's something that was never allowed in New Defenders. Cloud is constantly reactive, as Nathan said, beating against the cage of constriction around them. And they have no agency almost at all throughout the entirety of that series. Like, just stuff happens to them. People react to them. They do things for other people. In Defenders and Defenders Beyond, Cloud does nothing but choose their own new path. And it's radical. It's liberating to others. It's beyond emotional in a way that radiates out of the page and into me while I'm reading it. I've made no secret of the fact that reading several comics in the year around the year 2020 were kind of the major step for me moving forward with my own gender identity and identifying as non-binary. Something about reading Cloud when this comic was out just unhinged a cage inside of me too. And it was like a few last steps towards just, like, true self-acceptance, because Cloud becomes sort of like an icon, an archetype of self-actualization. And that could not be any more important to me personally, but I feel like that speaks to anybody.
To make this slightly less profound for one moment, you said it released a cage inside of you, and I thought you said it released a Cajun side of you, like your Gambit side.
they are Gambit, Shug.
No, Cher, that's not what I was saying. That's not what Gambit was saying.
No, thank you for the profoundness. The magic of Cloud comes. I read New Defenders like it's a bunch of episodes of Scooby-Doo. Really, truly. Yeah. It's that kind of Zoinkies, or Jinkies, whatever, Who's the Man Behind the Mask energy. Every episode has a different, slightly different soundtrack and, like, feel to it, but it's very gay. It's a very queer version of that. It's feminine acting characters. It's homophobia. It's powerful women who have metal boobs.
Yeah, it is powerful. Give it up for Valkyrie in this series, who I
Yeah.
like love. I am going to go back and read all of Defenders. I always love Valkyrie. I always love Moondragon, but that neither of them is maybe ever as good as they are in this series. It's wild.
The page of Valkyrie, like as big as 50 feet tall, I was like, oh my God.
There's
Yeah,
a
I'm in
lot of
love.
great shots of Valkyrie swinging her sword through somebody's neck with her like leg behind her going, ah, and it's amazing.
It's Marvel's Barbie, Patsy Walker,
Yes.
marrying the shirtless son of Satan. Like,
Oh
I mean, there's a lot of crazy in this run.
my
Oh
God.
my
And her ex-husband attacking them as part of Mutant Force. Why is he part of Mutant Force? Because he's not a mutant. But anyway,
At the wedding,
I
yeah.
know.
Oh, and then fucking Devil Slayer. Yeah, there's a lot of crazy shit, guys. I love the Defenders.
Who's
Oh,
that
one.
Glowtorch brand?
Oh yeah, no. The worst.
Yeah.
What a genuine delight to hang out with you both. But Steve and Nathan, it's great to spend this time with you both. I'd love to hear any final thoughts that you have. And where can people find you? Is there anything that you would like to plug?
If you are listening to this and you're like, is Defenders, especially New Defenders, something good to read? It is something you really need to read. It is wild, it's wacky, it's zany. If you like really out there camp, if you can stomach a little bit of the homophobia that you have to get through to get on the journey, then it's worth it because the end result, you'll come out feeling, first off, how did Marvel print this for so long? And second off, you'll feel really good about the characters. I'm Nathan. You can find me at Desiree Away on most socials, but mainly X.
Yeah, Defenders is also deeply psychological. It's deeply,
Yes.
like, it really gets into the psychology of the characters. There's commentaries on gender, on age, on classism,
Yeah.
on disability and ableism.
Candy Southern's leadership of the group from taking it from Beast when he's kind of like, I guess, fine. It's
Go
so
back to the
great.
Smut episode for my Candy Southern tribute.
Yes, please go listen to that.
Go, and then over to Steve.
Hi, it's me, Steve. You can find me on X slash Twitter at Howdy Duda. You can find me at any social media site. I dare you to try. At Howdy Duda. That's HOWDYDUDA. I mentioned earlier, I alluded to a comic series that helped me uncover my own non-binary awakening. I highly suggest you go read it if you have a chance. It's Paul Eller and Paul Tucker's Hollow Heart. Just read it and think of me and think that's my soul up there.
Aw, until the Star Thief gets it.
And
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Again, what a joy. We'll see you back here in a few minutes with Al Ewing.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do it yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the latter half of the Cloud episode. We're having so much fun putting this particular one together. And what a tremendous honor to have the incredible Al Ewing joining me for this conversation. Al, it's so great to see you again. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm doing okay. Got a couple of chores done today. Trimmed the hedge, glued some stuff back together that was broken.
It was such an honor to have you out on the main show. show a few weeks back for our interview. Tremendously received. I think so many people were so happy to hear of so many things you shared. The impact of Bisexual Hercules, you know, like different things that we got to talk about were enormous. One of the things we alluded to but didn't get to kind of follow up on was your incredible Defenders run. And I'd love to just launch right in there if that's okay with you. First of all, happy Pride. We're going to be putting this out in Pride Month. How are you going to be celebrating?
The march, my local march, is on the 1st. So I'm sort of jumping right in there. That's my local one. I've been doing it sort of every year. I'll carry a sign. You know, it is a protest. There's lots of protests about in this country. Generally be kind of carrying a sign in favor of not chopping up LGBTQ as some people would like to do. I think that's a bad thing. I don't believe there is LGBT without the T. I think people who are willing to, how many of the people who are so vocal about this on social media are, you know, actually real, who can say?
When I came out, I don't know if you know a lot of my story. In fact, I'm making a graphic memoir of my life right now. When I came out, my wife in a religious environment was pregnant with our second child. And I was so afraid that my coming out would screw up my children, but I couldn't not be out any longer. So I came out, got disowned by a whole bunch of people, lost a whole bunch of stuff, got exercised from a lot of stuff. My very first Pride was in Seattle, my very first impactful Pride, where I joined with a group of gay fathers who were there. And I left this environment where everybody was booing and hissing and disowning me, and then marched in this like 2-hour parade where everyone was cheering us and grabbing us for hugs. And I remember just like feeling beautiful and accepted and like just wonderful. Fast forward a few years, both of my children have come out. One is gay, one is non-binary, and we're raising them in this world where Pride now feels very corporate. It doesn't have the same magic as it did when I first came out, but the impact of acceptance and what it means for us, it's very easy for me to go back to that old place of feeling closed off and balance it with this new place of celebration. And Cloud is a character that really represents both of those journeys, their conflict in their early years versus the total embracing of their love and humanity of themselves and lack of humanity. You know, I'm bigger than this. I'm more than this. The way you wrote them is a really beautiful thing. I'd love to begin by, you're writing so much already. How did the initial Defenders book come to be? I almost feel like it was a story that you felt like you had to tell.
I mean, it came into being kind of pre-pandemic. So it's sort of, Defenders is one of those books where like the story of kind of how it happened is very bisected and bifurcated. So like, you know, it kind of began life before I was out. And then I guess the Cloud issue is sort of issue 4, which was written very much in the kind of the flush of it, the sort of, you know, attempting to get stuff down that previously I'd only kind of sublimated. First time I've been asked to do a Defenders book, in that there was The Best Defense, which was a sort of joined together annual project that was basically, I sort of got an email saying, do you want to kind of be, I won't spend long on this because it's not relevant. I got an email saying, you know, do you want to be in charge of this with sort of running, do you want to be like the showrunner of this? And my immediate thought was, well, it's Defenders. I should not be, you know, there should be no showrunner. There should just be like, let's get everybody to kind of do whatever they want to do. And then I'll bring it all together at the end somehow. And we did that and I thought it really worked. But like the second Defenders thing, again, I kind of came into it with this sort of, I mean, there were two things. One, I really wanted to work with Javier Rodriguez on like something decent sized.
Who is so incredible. Their art in these two books are so incredible.
As opposed to like previously when I just had short doses, you know, very, very brief kind of things. And, you know, we talked a lot. We were with friends. I've been to his house, which, you know, you can't say that about many artists. You know, I really wanted to work with him. We really wanted to work together and do something that was sort of loose, find a way of working together that could really kind of, because I'd worked with him first in Royals, and that was where I noticed the ability to like just take the layout stage and incorporate it into the art in such a way that was, you know, very, very quickly, I was not giving any kind of layout. I was just saying, this is what I think the page should begin here and end here. And, you know, everybody says this. And we sort of experimented with very, very loose ways of working. And issue four was one of those where I basically gave him kind of a screenplay, like a very kind of intricate plot with a lot in it, but it was still a plot. I wasn't breaking anything down. And he was like, well, I like this, but I need, I think, basic dialogue. So we went to that for the second series. And that was like a screenplay format. And that's, you know, that's how I've worked with him. So there was that. And also I thought Defenders ought to be, it should be different. The book generally should just be not the same as your standard superhero title, like by quite a way. So yeah, there was a bunch of stuff where kind of I wanted to do something weird and interesting and exciting. And I wanted to, you know, bring together a bunch of sort of Defenders who were like each members of old Defenders teams. So, you know, you had Doctor Strange, Betty Ross had been in the Defenders. Now she was Red Harpy. I was doing a lot of work with her at the time. Who else was in that first one? Oh yeah, the Masked Rider was like a loose end I wanted to tie up from Marvel 1000. You know,
Silver Surfer and Cloud, or the other two.
And Cloud was the last of them. And like, basically Cloud was, I mean, I say the last one, but you know, the last I'm mentioning, because Cloud was one of the first, I was like, oh, I'd like to do something with Cloud. It's been ages since we've seen Cloud. And I had this idea that, you know, I'd kind of go back and deal with all of the previous universes I talked about in the Ultimates, and like do something really fun based on that. And I'd have, you know, Strange kind of randomly bring the team together with his old,
yeah, there's that old trick old of
the tarot deck that he used.
Yeah, there's that old trick of using the tarot deck, which I think was back in like the Secret Defenders. I've never done a deep research of tarot. I need to, but I'm always fascinated when people use that. Teenie Howard used tarot a lot in her writing on Excalibur.
It's fun, I think.
This idea of like fate determining things, you know?
Yeah, people, I mean, it's you know, it's kind of, I guess, a way of putting symbolism like right in the book, in that if you've got this kind of ready-made dictionary of symbols, then you know, you can drop stuff and, you know, sort of trust readers to look them up. And I've sort of pushed that quite hard lately, because I put a lot of that in the Resurrection Magneto book. And by the end of it, I was sort of, man, I'm having to, you know, I'm shoehorning this in slightly. The story's gone in a different direction. I don't know if it would have been better to just drop all of the tarot symbolism after issue one. But with Defenders, I just thought, oh, this is fun. Let's have each of them represented by a card, because Strange is going to call them with his magical tarot deck. And then we can get right into those previous universes and have a lot of fun defining those. Issue one and issue two were done after the pandemic. I got about halfway through issue three, and then everything came to a halt for like 2 years. I want to say something like 2 years. It might be 18 months. Might just be a year. Time really stretched and...
yeah, things slowed down a lot back then.
So I kind of came back to it like very rusty, even slower than normal. Javier was a saint about it. That was when Javier was saying, if it's easier not to give me a full script, then you don't have to, because I'm just going to take all your layouts and kind of ignore them anyway. So like, we got into a really experimental phase coming out of the pandemic, just to kickstart the thing again, just to get ourselves back running. And that was where 4 came from, because 4 was probably the most experimental issue. And that was sort of a tradition I tried to kind of keep up with the second series, which was, you know, it's issue 4, Cloud comes back. But like, yeah, 4 was very much kind of,
it's a, I don't know, beautiful, it's the penultimate Cloud issue, and it's maybe the most beautiful thing I've ever seen you put together. If I had to choose my one favorite Al Ewing work, let me focus a little bit. In my initial interview with you, I talked about this trend of reading your work front to back and seeing your characters kind of challenge the patriarchy with something new. And you and Dan Slott are kind of the only writers, really actively since Mark Grenwald at least, that's really explored like the foundational cosmic forces of the universe, you know, like Quasar going to this dimension of abstract, yeah. this idea of, you know, death taking on a human form, eternity taking on a human form. We see a lot of that, but you're going back into previous universes and kind of slowly deconstructing what reality is. And Cloud becomes the focal point for redefining that. Before we kind of focus on Cloud themselves, I'd love to hear kind of what it was like for you to delve into this kind of cosmic backdrop of Marvel being like the eighth universe and everything that came before. I mean, I guess Hickman did this too, right? With Secret Wars.
It's all building on previous stuff and having fun with previous stuff that I've established. And yeah, it kind of came out of two things. It came out of like, Secret Wars has just happened and we have to talk about it. And Secret Wars hasn't really ended yet, and we don't really know, who knows, that the universe doesn't, but we can.
And this is when the Ultimate Universe got melded with the Marvel Universe. Miles Morales is here now.
A little bit. like a couple of people came over, but like, but at the same time, I was doing the Contest of Champions tie-in, the video game tie-in, and all of the mobile games at that point, and I don't think they do any longer. I don't know if Marvel Snap does this. Marvel Snap just has a sort of basic credit that sort of looks like a crystal. Don't think that's called ISO 8, but all of the Marvel mobile games, including Contest of Champions, ISO 8 in them, which was this sort of special stuff that they'd sort of introduced across all these different platforms, all these different game studios. And it's like, I thought it'd be fun to introduce that into the main universe. And I thought it'd be fun to play with it. So I put it in, it was in Contest of Champions. It had to be in Contest of Champions, that the MacGuffin. I put it in the Ultimates as well. I thought the 8 should refer to something fun. So I made it like the 8th Cosmos, which meant there was a 7th, which meant the Galactus come from the 6th. And basically at the end of Ultimates, I did this big kind of double page spread thing, which I wanted Trevor Foreman to do, but this is another example of me being slightly rubbish. And I think we had to get somebody else to do it. But they did a wonderful job. You know, a wonderful job was done. And it's great watching all of these giant presences like appear. But I wrote a little bit of a blurb for each of them that was just sort of off the top of my head. And like with a kind of rough idea of like, oh, they'll get more and more kind of complex. And like 5 is going to be in charge of magic, because of like pentagrams, and 6 is the big Kirby universe that Galactus came from, so that's like the big science universe. And I thought, this is fun. We don't want this to be too crowded. We don't want a bunch of people hanging out in the background. 2 and 3 are going to be almost personality voids anyway. Let's have one of them missing. And the Fantastic Four was missing at the time. So I was like, let's have the 4th Cosmos missing. And I was just grabbing loads of stuff, like resonant phrases from the history of Marvel publication. Journey into Mystery, like Pilgrim, True Believer, all of this stuff. A bunch of old Stan Lee phrases went in there. But it was all basically just like, oh, this is fun. And I'll drop this in and it'll be a nice thing. Maybe one day I'll get back to it. Maybe someday I'll contradict it tomorrow. I've contradicted it myself. Like the whole Far Shore thing is like really loosey-goosey in terms of like what that is. It's gone from being this kind of like the most ultimate place and, it's to just sort of being like a kind of beach right on the edge of things. But beyond that, you can find even more stuff. I keep sort of building and mapping out stuff, and I really shouldn't. I should leave some of it to just sort of... But I mean, the maps all contradict each other anyway, so that's fine. I mean,
you're describing the production of this show to a particular point. I've got a vision of what happens a year out, but I can't plan more than 3 months ahead, because every time I do, I end up changing it. As I get closer, it's exhausting.
And basically, this is the thing. People, I feel like, especially on the social media, people kind of come at this stuff with an understanding, with an expectation, rather, that I've planned it out since the beginning. And also, I've planned it in such a way that, like, their particular obsession is validated. Like, I mean, every so often, I notice people, like, arguing over whether, like, all of the use of, like, fires and caves in my work, like, they bundle them all together and they make it all the Phoenix. And it's, like, Secret Fire comes from, like, this one issue of Doctor Strange that Peter B. Gillis wrote. And it's, like, it's just this phrase that I thought was really evocative. And it's, like, you think about this stuff and you write stories, and every time you write a new story, your understanding of it changes a little. So the old stories don't quite fit anymore. And that's just how it is. And if you want to build a continuity out of this stuff, you're going to have to selectively smooth out a couple of the bumps.
The very definition of the Phoenix Force is that itself. It's like 5 things all at the same time,
Yeah. I am now officially done with X. I have finished. I'm honestly, I think I'm leaving at the right time, just because, I don't know, I can't be doing with all of the drama. There's a lot of drama. Not so much behind the scenes. Behind the scenes is very sort of professional, but it's like, I don't know, there's so much. People are really kind of, why aren't you guys all mad at each other? Why aren't you guys all fighting each other?
There's been a lot of immaturity
and
reactions, but I imagine it's that way among the professionals at some level as well.
But Rob said something good today, which is like, there's no professional worth that salt who isn't occasionally salty.
When I worked on the handbooks, we had an online team of 20 people, and there was plenty of saltiness as it went down sometimes. Yeah. Let me introduce the primary story. Now, earlier in the episode, we've covered Cloud's early history. Doctor Strange, as you mentioned, is using the Magic Tarot deck, and he turns a card over for each person who's prophesied to be part of this team. For Cloud, he turns over the card Lovers Reversed, and the dialogue here states, or the caption, self-love, internal conflict, a strained relationship. And the card shows the two blonde teens that we talked about embracing in a field of smoke. It's upside down. Strange clearly uses they, them to describe them kind of for the first time. They too are an ex-defender. They are also a sentient nebula, a place where stars are born. They could only assume humanity through the intervention of a cosmic cube. I cannot summon that much power at short notice. But a summoning spell brings Cloud in. They shift into the Carol form, and then the group of defenders go back to the previous universe. They meet Galactus's mom, Taya, who's another fantastic character, the world devourer Omnimax. They're always kind of facing this like end of the world as the universes kind of get slowly destructed and they're moving backwards in time. In issue 4, I want to read a little bit of Cloud's narration as well. And this is the really special Cloud issue. From an LGBTQ perspective, from a modern generation challenging the patriarchy perspective, I'm just going to read your words with Cloud quickly. The lovers were traveling on a lonely road. They met a being that could not fully be described in words, and that being was me. In seeking to communicate, to understand the lovers, to understand myself, I adopted their shapes. I had no wish to choose, so I adopted both. I wanted to save them, save everything, and I wanted to know love, to know life. But I learned that to know life is to know pain and heartache, to know a world where the simplest truths of myself are mysteries to those around me. My name is Cloud. I cannot fully be described in words, but I am. And more than anything else, I am a being of love. And they start fighting this kind of bizarre, primitive Hulk monster. They can't communicate. And Cloud states, I try to say something back, to speak this being's language. But as so often happens, I cannot make myself understood. Can we ever fully know each other? Or are we always distorted, flipped, and reversed by the distance between us? A reflection in a concave mirror. Lovers upside down. Strange helps Cloud learn how to commune with the creature. They learn its name is 1 in 4. It's an idea given life, but it's also 4 in 1. 4 split creatures combined. It's all things. It defies definition, yet it exists, which is a weird and amazing parallel of what Cloud is. And as things begin to settle, Cloud states, I've begun to notice the pattern of our adventures, and this primal reality is made of patterns. With my hypersenses, I can feel the repeating circles, some laid down when the cosmos first began. Could we create a new path for these archetypal entities, free them from the illusion of change? Not without breaking our own cycle. I wonder, do they know they're in a cage? And these subtle challenges of like the patriarchy and colonialism and the binary thinking patterns that exist in our world. Finally, they meet at a place. There's a scary kind of two-dimensional Galactus monster called What Must Be, and things feel impossible. So Cloud breaks the rules and changes, grows into something new. Their narration is, there is hope because patterns are breaking. And outside their reach, outside their cage, we can evolve. We can grow. We can know one another, and we cannot be described in words. And if we cannot be described in words, we can learn new words. And Cloud reforms into a composite, fully realized creature. One half of their face more masculine, one half of their face more feminine. Like one of those creatures in that song in Hedwig and the Angry Inch is what it reminded me of. The children of the sun and the moon mixing together in the way that they were always supposed to be. It looks like a fabulous David Bowie drag queen, this new version of them. So I want to pause there, except to hear, like, Dr. Strange turns to Cloud and says, Cloud, is that you? And Cloud says, in a shape I created for myself, Doctor, outside the old patterns, outside their boundaries, and I'm ready to make myself heard. So Al, let me hear about why you needed to include Cloud. What was your research of this character like, and what was the story you set out to tell with this incredible character? It's so beautiful.
I originally included them in the team because I thought, you know, Cloud was cool, and B2B Gillis is a writer of many stories that I've enjoyed, both Song of Those Defenders and Some of Those Strange. I wasn't sort of, there are times when I make decisions and I don't really know why they make them. They just feel right in the gut. And to begin with, it was one of those. And then there came a time when it was like, okay, it's issue 4. Oh, then, and you mentioned Cloud's tarot card being reversed. All of the Defenders' tarot cards were reversed. It's like every issue, you know, even before Strange makes the casting, we're introduced to him. He's kind of floating upside down. Every issue shows like that defender visually reversed, like, and then, you know, talking about how they relate to the kind of, you know, without kind of getting too far into the tarot of it all, just how they kind of relate to that particular symbol. So yeah, this isn't something that's unique to Cloud. When I basically, so yeah, I got the back half of issue 3 done, and I had an idea that issue 4 was going to be like a kind of dimension of like archetypal heroes and like just like raw symbols, and this was going to be sort of like the pattern of the Marvel Universe. And I think by the time I got there, I was becoming slightly disillusioned with the idea of the illusion of change. And, you know, I remain so today. I've grown to appreciate, like, moving to, you know, renewing certain anchor points, but also, like, and this was very true, I feel, in the 10s, and it's a little true today. I feel like the last big meaningful, I don't know, there was a time when I felt that the last big meaningful change that was allowed to stick was sort of Luke Cage's marriage and having a kid, and then, but then Iceman happened, and that's obviously, and this did a lot of great stuff in terms of kind of forcing change. And, you know, I've managed to make a couple of things happen myself, but like, I don't like the idea of sort of moving back to previous iterations, previous status quos. I feel like if you do cycle around again with a character, it should be from a growth perspective, it should be like the kind of story circle, you know, they return having changed. So in some ways, issue 4 is sort of about that. We meet these archetypes who are kind of stuck in these very repeating patterns. I feel like I'd come right out. I mean, we just had, you know, Secret Wars. I feel like I'd kind of come right out of, which is like the best possible version of that. That was an amazing story that reused a few motifs. You know, the bad version of this, and I think everybody involved with this, you know, did not have a terrific time on it, was Civil War 2, which, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to get into can of worms. I'm not, you know, I was very far from at the center of it. From the center of it, I was watching at the edges and trying to make my pieces of it work. But like, yeah, that was not a fun time for anybody, I don't believe. So yeah, basically Defenders 4 was sort of, it was kind of a commentary on like the status quo and on the need for changing and evolving stories. And that's something that gets harder and harder as you go, as we pile years and years on these characters. And it's like, there's no way out of it. If you reboot the universe, you're just doing like Spider-Man's origin again and again and again, like in the movies. And, you know, probably the best thing the MCU did with Spider-Man is not tell that damn origin. Like, we don't see, you know, Bruce Wayne's parents getting shot in Batman films anymore because everybody's seen it like a dozen times, you know. But I mean, the alternative is what Marvel does, which is, and what I think they should continue to do, which is just keep that universe running. It's all one thing from like the 60s to now, you know, compressed into about 15 years of Marvel time. I keep pushing to add like a year or two to that, but it's, you know, basically I have this, I'd love to start a comic with, you know, it was 20 years ago today and do the origin. But like, that would lock everybody into like 20 years of Marvel time. So I can't do that. But like, Spider-Man cannot be 40. I think that's one of the cardinal rules. But yeah, basically, and the trouble with that approach is that like, the characters have to know that they're repeating themselves, that situations they have been in before are kind of coming up again. And it's like, and that becomes a problem when you have to write like a new Thor story, which is the position I'm in at the minute. You know, I've got to kind of, okay, well, has this thing that I'm thinking of been done before? I don't think so. It's entirely possible that there's some sort of Thor annual that isn't on Marvel Unlimited that I've completely missed, that like just does the whole thing in like 30 pages. And if that's true, I'm in trouble, because somebody's going to be like, hey, that's just Thor annual 14. And I'll be like, oh no, it is. I mean, I'm already using stuff from like Thor annual 10, but like that you can find on Marvel Unlimited, so that's all right. But yeah, basically, so that was, and I kind of started having, you know, freshly come out and being full of just like, you know, it is like bursting out of a shell. You kind of suddenly feel the air on your skin, suddenly looking at everything in a new way. I was like, oh man, I've got to talk about this. And like, here's Cloud, great. I can kind of, so it sort of became this thing. And I was giving Javier these very sort of, it was really like the script on the level of like, okay, on this page, you know, this happens and Doctor Strange does this and he casts, I'd have to go back and look, but I feel like stuff like the kind of the Fantastic Four archetype, you know, opens its mouth and these colors stream out and Doctor Strange can't understand them. And it's like, but I wasn't really giving Javier any dialogue, so I think I was giving him like, you know, rough emotional moods. And that was, and then I kind of got the pages back and I wrote, you know, what I was feeling over the top of them. So it was very much a kind of quite a raw thing from both of us, in that it's like, and you know, we kind of stepped back from that from there, and that like Javier was like, yeah, I think I, you know, this has been fun, but I think I need to like have a rough understanding of what people are saying. for us to do this more effectively. So that was like Defender Series 2. We did a screenplay stuff. And then I kind of tinker with the dialogue after I had the art back a little bit.
So this storyline also feels like it's a commentary on characters, but it's also a commentary, for me at least when I read it, on society. And Cloud kind of breaking the rules and saying, I want to be bigger than what's there. I want to find it and redefine it. And maybe I can find hope then. There's a lot of pathos there for me.
That was definitely in the stuff about we could all learn new words was, I guess, a response to the kind of, and it sends me that this has been going on for such a long time, but like, you know, the sort of language kerfuffle, you know, the kind of the pronouns thing, it's been going on for years, and it's such a small thing, but it's treated like just using the words people would like used for themselves. It's just, it's not even an imposition. If somebody got married and wanted to take a different name, we'd respect that. It's absolutely. Like, it's not even an imposition. But it's treated like, oh, it's the end of the world. And it's like, so yeah, there was definitely some kind of commentary on that. And also, you know, I was sort of learning new stuff and new words and kind of new definitions. And it was sort of, and you know, kind of learning the word that was I was comfortable with for me, which is, you know, bi as opposed to sort of pan or omni. And you know, there's a lot of history in that. It's part of it is that I, you know, I was born in 1977. I'm, you know, an old man. This is the world the word I've learned.
We're the same age.
So I don't want to deny or forget the trans-inclusive history of bisexuality. I do feel like there's a kind of a desire to like just take a look at the word. Oh, it's got the word bi in it. That means to. I'm going to define it like, and it's like, no, historically, you know, historically, bisexuals and trans people have been allies, you know, since the 70s. I'm getting all this from like Verily Bitchy. She's got this great, amazing, amazing videos on like bisexual history. It's like at the same time, people can define and describe themselves however they want. So, you know, it's not a, yeah, so that is kind of commenting on that. It is commenting on that thing of like, no, we can use language and concepts. We can kind of find new ones. That's all fine. That's good. We shouldn't be kind of locked into old patterns of thinking because, you know, it's how we've always sort of, it's what we've always known.
Can I hear a little bit about Cloud's redesign?
I'm really going to have to like look up exactly what I put in the original plot. I'm pretty sure I just said to Javier, like, yeah, you know, Cloud's male and female cells sort of merged together and we have this new version.
Was Hedwig and the Angry Inch a resource point for this?
Because I have never seen Hedwig and the Angry Inch. I cannot speak for Javier on this.
Okay.
When we're done,
I'm gonna send you a video clip from Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Okay.
Hedwig and the Angry Inch is about a trans woman who has a pretty tragic upbringing, who's now like a really tortured rock star singing to the crowd for the whole show. And there's a song called The Origins of Love, in which they posit that the gods created the children of the sun and the children of the moon. One is male presenting, one is female presenting. And we spend, they cut them in half, and we spend our whole lives looking for the other half. And if we can find them, they're equally male and female. They're all parts and all things mixed together. I'll send you the video. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about, because it's such a touch point for this design. It's beautiful.
Swiss. I'm looking at the map and like, yeah, here we go. I've written like, we see them expand, becoming both their male and female forms and a third androgynous form between, kind of like a sort of trinity. Yeah, Clouds look worried all through the issue. Now all their faces look serene. Yeah, there was, Javier put a lot into this. I'm looking at the plot and we can see why I put back, because it's very like, my thinking was like, I want to kind of give you total as much freedom as I can on the outset to like explore these concepts. So these are very sort
Javier Rodriguez, you're amazing.
These are quite sparse descriptions, but like my thinking was like, at the back end I will. And yeah, the back end was really kind of, I had to kind of invent this like, oh man, I made someone work for like a letter as well, because I had to invent this sort of new language of colors. And then it went from CMYK to RGB. I have no idea what that was supposed to represent, because like the CMYK is, you know, the base language of comics. I don't know if that's when it becomes, you know, from comics to kind of the primary colors of sort of. Yeah, no, Javier put so much work into this. Absolutely more than earned the whole, the co-storyteller credit on this issue. And then, yeah, I kind of came in and basically put all of the, you know, formed the story kind of from the art almost. I mean, I don't know. I kind of don't want to, I'm walking a tightrope because I don't want to make it sound like it was all Javier, but I don't want to kind of undersell his contribution either.
Yeah, it's a collaborative effort, but we all know how much work artists put into their beautiful work.
Actually. Oh, yeah. And on this especially, it's like, yeah, to the extent that we then shifted our way of working, you know, backward a little. We made this issue out of using that work method. So, you know, it's capable of incredible things. I think it was issue 5 that sort of, you know, having credited this amazing thing, issue 5 was then, and now we have to wrap up the plot. And it was like, oh, actually, this work method is really good for like these allegorical, you know, super poetic, symbolic issues. But when you actually have to write
let me wrap up Cloud's story in Defenders 5. They pass into another new dimension, and there's a Deathbringer who has changed their name to What Can Be instead of What Must Be, which again is a redefinition of hope. Everything dies. The fourth cosmos must end, but the archetypes can be saved, not through old patterns, cycles, restrictions, through a new adventure. Everything lives. And in that universe's version of God, who is like a giant, colorful, rainbow drag queen face in the sky named the Queen of Nevers, shows up, and Cloud decides to stay behind in their new form. They say the eighth cosmos runs on old patterns too. Even a nebula is caged by them. I'd rather be an archetype and free. Which is this idea of the trans or non-binary character that was there all along. We get to see them again in your Defenders Beyond work very briefly, when a new team of Defenders is on a different mission, very Loki-centric. It's great. But Cloud appears as one of these archetypes and says things like, the other side of nowhere is everywhere, and unchecked possibility is freedom. This incredible non-binary fortune cookie. this idea of possibility. I'd love to hear what the reaction from kind of the X community or Marvel community was to your overall Defenders work, as we're kind of drawing to a close here.
People really dig it. It's like people really had a great time with it. I really enjoyed it. It's like, I think part of writing a Defenders book is to accept that it's not going to sell as well as an Avengers book. And you've got to go in kind of not even thinking about that and just make something that is, you know, unique and special to you. And that's kind of the Defenders tradition, because, you know, Defenders was, it came from people like, you know, Steve Gerber and David Kraft, pretty much, and Peter McGillis, and pretty much everybody who's ever taken a hand on it has done something very personal with it. And I think that is a tradition that is good and should remain. And I think that's what the book should be. It should be like almost like the Doom Patrol, in that Marvel's Doom Patrol, in that, like, you know, DC, the Doom Patrol as a brand, it's the world's strangest heroes, but it's also a marker that you're going to be getting sort of personal and esoteric work. And I think the Defenders is that as well. In terms of Cloud in particular, I think I didn't want them to kind of come back to the 616 and sort of be in the background for ages. And sort of just generally either be in the background for ages or sort of off in limbo doing not very much. I don't know, just like ill-treated in some way. But like I thought maybe giving Cloud a kind of a sort of happy ever after that was also like a mission, a really fun cosmic mission, which is to kind of like hang around and be sort of the speaker for this cosmic entity who kind of, and I don't think when the Pilgrim started, I don't think they were like the Never Queen. That was a thing I kind of came up with later because I thought it was great. And I think I came up with that for the second series. I just thought, oh, wait, because we're doing, like, you know, all of the stuff that Dan came up with, like the land of couldn't be, shouldn't be, and that's sort of, why does the Never Queen hang out there? It's like, you know, if she represents that possibility, oh, it's also land of can't be, shouldn't be, that's fun. And like, and let's bring Cloud back since it's the fourth issue, so the Pilgrim is also the Never Queen, they're the same. And, you know, and part of that was in response to like Javier just drawing this incredible best kind superheroic face in the sky. The Pilgrim's design is 100% Javier, and I know that because my original thing was the giant face in the sky. I'm always doing these giant faces in the sky. But my original thing, and I will take the lumps on this, was that it should look like Jack Kirby. I'm sorry. But yeah, basically, so Javier, you know, completely got me thinking about the Pilgrim in a whole new way. And then the Pilgrim became the Never Queen. I had the Pilgrim speak in these like giant letters, kind of CMYK, which is also like, it's, you know, it's also like got resonance with the pansexual flag. And if you sort of pastel it out a bit, it's got resonance with the trans flag. It's like all of this stuff is like, it's, if you start looking for the connections there, then, you know, Quintus is just baked into comics.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a bunch of, we start out with men wearing like tight clothes and underwear on the outside, punching each other for fun when their wives are at home. that's the whole premise.
But also we start with, you know, Superman, the original Superman stories are like, it's this raging force of social justice. And it's kind of like, so, you know, right from the first seed of this stuff, it's sort of, it's all in there. And like, you know, the people working on these, they're from all walks of life. They're all people who can't make it happen in advertising or whatever, you know, or in newspaper strips. Outcasts, outsiders, dreamers, weirdos, oddballs. This is a big part of comics. This is kind of, and the people who get into comics and stay in comics, they're like, you know, these are not, I feel like if you can get out of comics, you do. If you're not broken in the way that keeps you doing comics, you do something else. But yeah, like, yeah, but the people who are, you know, we're all very, and a lot of people from a lot of different places kind of come together in that. And that's great.
And, I mean,
and a huge contingent of that coming together are queer folks.
It's always been about dreaming about what is possible and redefining the human story in a larger than life way. Yeah. And what is that if not queerness? Al, what an incredible honor to pick your brain about this. I love this series so much. I love this character. And I particularly, again, my number one favorite single issue of yours and Javier's is that Cloud redefinition. As we're wrapping up, my friend, let me just thank you profusely. It's such an honor to have you back on. Where can people find you if they'd like? And is there anything you'd like to plug in your post-X era coming up this summer?
Oh boy. Well, we're in that phase now where things are coming to the end and new things are yet to be announced. There are new things that are coming soon. If you can find me writing Thor, I'm writing,
which is so good. Chad Hammer, by the way.
that was fun. We're getting back into, people who've been missing the mythic, people who've been missing the mythical element are gonna get a treat with the upcoming issues, because we're heading back into more mythological territory as Thor finds himself unable to do business as usual on Midgard because of recent events. So he's taking some time for Asgard. So we're gonna get a few stories of that. It's kind of cycling between his two homes, really. And then there's Venom War is gonna be a wild, it's absolutely wild. It's basically where Venom, the spirit of Venom, just took over the narrative completely. It mostly takes place in a wrestling ring. You know, will there be more Venom after that? I can possibly comment. There's also, relevant to this podcast and the discussion we just had, I'm doing my first DC work in a very, very long while for their Pride special. And it's a Blue Starman story. And it was like, they're basically like, oh, do you want to do a Pride story for us? And I was like, do you know what? I do. What's Blue Starman up to? And, you know, recently in Danger Street, if people like it enough, this has potential for sort of, you know, this could be a seed of something. You could kick something off from here. It's like, this is, because I basically had to, I was like, I'm not doing Disco because that's been done. How do I sort of bring Starman date a little bit, but not too far up to date? So I went Vaporwave. He's gone full 80s. He's gone from the 70s to the 80s. It's a very, Stephen Burns on the art. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Very, very lucky to work with him. So that's going to be great. Pick that up. And everything else I'm doing, and there's a lot of it, I cannot talk about. And also, you can't find me. Yeah. All my socials, there are none. I've pretty much almost completely quit. I was on Blue Sky for a while, and then I just stopped. It was like, I don't know, I'm in sort of a position right now where I feel like nobody particularly needs to hear from me outside of the work. I've got almost full deck on this.
Well, Al Ewing, thank you so much. Thanks for coming back on the show. What an honor once again. Thanks everybody for listening. Stay tuned for our next, our Patreon Pride feature next week is going to be all about a similarly incredible character, Victoria Hand from the Brian Michael Bendis era. Lesbian icon, Republican, conservative, complicated. Sarah Century and Priya from the Bitches on Comics podcast are joining me for that. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Al. We'll see you back here next time on the Gray Milk and Lane Patreon.
Thank you. Thanks.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.